Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Custerbus. My name is Christian Corley, and with me this week is James McLean. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hello there. We've got a few things to go through today, and then we've got another podcast coming along at the weekend for you. It's our much anticipated Box of Delights. Conversation between myself and James, and then conversation between myself and Chris Chapman, who worked on the new Blu-ray release and produced the new documentary Tide and Time. So today we're going to be talking about Doctor Who, we're going to be talking about Star Wars, and in our Patreon only section, James and I will be discussing William Shatner, the Roddenberry Archive, Star Trek, and that new short CGI heavy movie. But before we get onto that, there's quite exciting news for Doctor Who, for classic Doctor Who in particular. The second Doctor's final adventure of his era from 1969, The War Games, is getting the Daleks in colour treatment. It's coming in full colour and in a sort of a roughly 90-minute play length. That's one hell of an abridgment, isn't it?
Yeah, 10 episodes down to 4, essentially.
Essentially, yeah.
I'll be fascinated to see how they do. I've always loved the War Games. When I was younger, I used to love it for its length. I remember when I was about 18 and when it came out on VHS.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, okay, go there.
Sorry, I've had an early start today. It's like
no, it's fine.
Do carry on.
I really liked it. I did like its a length. It was solid.
You're doing it on purpose now.
It was straight, wasn't it? I can't actually do it. I want to do it, and I can't really think my head around doing it because everything, as we just said, is really crazy and busy at the moment, and I can't play the innuendo. I don't tend to do innuendos these days. It's kind of beneath me.
Look at the size of that doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. What I was trying to say, God, maybe we need to do a cut here, I liked the duration of it. Mm-hmm. I thought the duration of it was good.
There is a lot of back and forth, though, isn't there?
Absolutely. When I came back to watching it a few months ago on the iPlayer streaming, I found it, a little tedious, the back and forth. It didn't grip me in the same way. So I'm wondering whether I'd actually enjoy a slightly shorter. I think actually I'd have preferred a slightly longer than 4 because there is a lot there.
Yeah.
But there is, I'd be fascinated to see how they've made those cuts, what they've pulled out of there. Because do they take a large chunk of the back and forth? Is there a nice segue where you can do that?
I'm not sure. It's tricky, isn't it? It's one that clearly the editors have sat in front of it and worked out very carefully where these cuts can go, because they're not going to get, they're going to get absolutely hammered if they've just like taken a scythe to it willy-nilly. They've got to have rebuilt the story like they did with the Daleks.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming there might be bits in episode 10 which can be chopped, because there's like the escape back to the TARDIS bit, which is a failed escape.
You know? Yeah.
Could that be lost? Are there bits in the sort of middle section going between zones which could be? I mean, I think that's the tough thing is that it is actually a big, quite broad story. And yes, 10 episodes is probably a bit indulgent. I'd have liked to have seen it perhaps sort of brought down to maybe 2 hours or something, because I think there's a lot there.
Yeah.
But we've also got to take into account this is also probably like a sense of colorization as well, and as much as it is I'm not quite sure how the process has been streamlined these days.
It looks stunning, though.
It does look good, doesn't it? Looks better than the Daleks. The Daleks was good.
I was particularly intrigued by the purple in the above the three Time Lords. That's all like purple glowing.
Well, this is it, and I must admit, I rewatched the Colour Daleks a couple of months ago as well, and I was quite impressed with a lot of the included extra effects in there. Mm. Some of the music drops didn't quite work as I think they hoped, but the actual colorization, the effects on top of the colorization they did for things like the Daleks, and just to sort of give it a sense of quality, were
Yeah.
good by and large. I think the only thing I thought was a little naff was the two things I thought were bad. I think the TARDIS materializing in at the beginning looks a bit weird, and at the very end there's a cut, and I don't remember it being such a harsh cut between them outside the TARDIS and suddenly they're inside the TARDIS. And I think they just go. You don't see them say goodbye. It just sort of,
Right,
there's
yeah.
just a cut to the TARDIS disappearing. And it just feels a bit janky there. But yeah, no, I'd be really interested. And I think it's a great and an ambitious story. I'd be fascinated to know why they picked it, though. Why pick a 10-episode story to colorize and reduce down to four? What's the rationale there? I would really be interested. And are they going to do this per, well, no, I suppose that's it, isn't it? It's only the two, really, they need to colorize. The two. I was going to say, are they going to colorize each Doctor? yeah, might get to the seventh and they might start realizing that there is actually a flaw in this colorization process.
Well, I would not be surprised if they have a revisit of some of the Pertwee recolorizations, to be honest with you, because the demons and Invasion of the Dinosaurs, they're good, but they're not this
No,
right, are they?
true.
They're not this sort of like what's the word I'm looking for? These are like what is the word I'm looking for? It's very bright, not bright. It's very so.
Gaudy.
Gordy's the word I was going to look for.
No.
No. Now Russell T. Davies might be able to shed some light on this. When I quote Russell T. Davies, I really struggle not to do like the worst Talfrin Thomas accent in the world.
Does he say in the statement at any point brilliant? Because he does love his brilliant.
No, he doesn't. He says, "From the day I arrived back on
Oh no,
Doctor
don't do
Who,
that.
this was the plan." I don't know what accent that was. To colourise old stories and bring them back to life. And on Doctor Who Day itself, it's great to announce he's celebrating the show's wonderful heritage with an all-time classic. It looks so vivid. That's what I was looking for. Vivid and new. And for fans of black and white, the story in its original form will stay on BBC iPlayer. So everyone wins.
So which story out of Troughton would you have liked to have seen done? And please don't say the Mind Robber.
Okay. One of the Cybermen ones, I think, and I think that would have fit. That I mean, I realize this kind of bookends the '60s. You know, Daleks. They can't use the first serial, obviously, at the moment. So the Daleks, and then the War Games. But I do think I would have liked the Invasion or the other one, Moonbase.
Yeah, I well, a moon base isn't complete though, is it?
No.
So you really need to be
Well,
thinking about.
it's easier to cut down.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. But yeah, I think that's an interesting question because I naturally would gravitate to the Seeds of Death because
Yeah, well, that
I
was my
still
other
love
thing.
that.
Maybe something with Ice Warriors, yeah.
But the invasion, I think, is kind of nice because I think one of the nice things of which so far they've not been able to do with their choices is to recolorize the 60s.
Yes,
So in the
exactly.
invasion, you get that opportunity to get a little bit of London,
Yeah.
a little bit of the world of the 60s in there, which I think would be kind of cool. So obviously the war machines might be interesting in that
Oh
and
yeah.
might only be interesting in that way. But
I quite like the war machines.
yeah, so I guess. But there isn't that many in the 60s which are complete
No.
that you can really do that with in terms of, because there's not many of Troughton really that are that earthbound, and the ones that are. I mean, I'd love to see the faceless ones if that was more complete. That would be a lovely one to see colorized. But yeah, no, I think it's a really nice surprise, and I do love the way that they've actually managed to hold these surprises. So when they drop, they are genuine surprises. I was not anticipating that we would get another recolorization. But more Hartnells would be good. I'd certainly like to see. I mean, Dalek Invasion would be a lovely one to see.
Yes, it would, especially after what we've already had. So yeah, it would be a nice follow up for that. I'm just looking through the page on the Doctor Who TV, which is the BBC Studio, BBC Worldwide or BBC Studios or whatever website. And there's this photo of the three Time Lords who pass judgment on the Doctor. And now, in the I'm going off on a very nerdy tangent here for Classic Doctor Who. in the New Adventures novels, the middle gentleman, played by Bernard Horsfall, was suggested to be Chancellor Goth.
Yeah, from Deadly Assassin.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
I like it. I don't see why not. I mean, there could be another interesting sort of like cultural argument that we don't see with the Time Lords, which is that they just keep regenerating into each other's faces out of spite or just, you know, tomfoolery. It comes close to Halloween and it's like, well, you know, just use up a regeneration for a good costume. I'll come as my mate John.
Yeah.
Shock everyone with my length and duration.
And girth.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be like, that's not John. John doesn't have that length, duration and girth. How's that possible? And they'll be like, look at the face. It's the face that's important. Okay, yeah. So yeah, it could be something like that, couldn't it? It could be that when someone in your family line passes and you want to remember them, you regenerate into their face.
Yes, maybe.
That could be a thing. Might be looked down upon from the Time Lords. The upper echelons might be, you know, the upper echelons of Time Lords might be like, yeah, that's just not, that's a bit creepy, mate. But it might be done. And maybe that's what's happened there. But yeah, I think it's nice. I think certainly with Doctor Who in the classic era, less so than in the new series, because there isn't really much established continuity until you get to Nathan Turner's era.
Mm.
It's kind of nice to find ways where you can just give a few.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of allows you to rewatch Deadly Assassin and see it in a slightly different light if you see that character as being one who judged the Doctor in the War Games. So I like to think things like that. I think when it doesn't actually contradict anything either, why not?
Yeah. There's also there's a couple of other things about that photo, and I've already mentioned like the purple glow on the ceiling. It looks like an LED, which obviously it can't be. There's also their shimmering gowns. I didn't realize they were so sort of shimmery. I always saw them as white and black, and clearly they're not white and black, they're blue and gray.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a sad thing, isn't it, with black and white, that there's so many options that were done practically, which just, you know, are lost. And sometimes that's not a bad thing, because when you know it's going out in black and white, you're making these choices to some degree because you know it's going black and white. Obviously, as people know, the green of the console in the TARDIS, you know, white would have just been a bit of a glare, sort of thing. So there is that, but I think it's just really nice to see it like that. And even if it's not a sense of like, this is how it should be, it's nice to see it in a sense of like, okay, this is how it was when they filmed it. This is what they would have been wearing. I can see it now as they would have seen it on set. I think that's a really cool way as well. I mean, the one thing I will also say about the War Games, which is nice as a pick and was dangerous with the Daleks, is, as we've said before, you know, the beauty of black and white hides so many production shortcuts, but there aren't that many production shortcuts in the War Games. The jungle in the Daleks, I didn't think fared too badly, to be fair. But in, say, if you did the Web Planet,
you'd be in trouble. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I think the War Games is a good pick for that. Ultimately, also, I should also say, I think the Seeds of Death is perfect for that reason as well, because it's got a good quality production all the way through.
And, you know, something I've think about with the Seeds of Death is, you know, with all the foam.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sort of thing that maybe Pip Madeley on Twitter might have done, is cut between a scene of there being lots of foam to the Rolling Stones doing I Know It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It, in a tent that is increasingly filling with foam.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I've not checked Pip's stuff out for a while. Maybe that is the case.
Maybe. Just an interesting thing about Bernard Horsfall again. He sadly passed away in 2013. He's in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, which was shooting around the same time this was.
Oh, okay.
He plays Sean Campbell, who's actually a character from the book as well. And it helps out Bond with a crane and that portable photocopier that Bond, played by the Australian fella George Lazenby, carries into the office to do some photocopies, an office owned by Blofeld. Anyway, gone off on the trivia there, haven't we? Shall we move on?
And let's also remember that David Campbell in Dalek's Invasion of Earth in the book was David Cameron.
Was he really?
Yes.
Gosh, yes.
Yes, he was called David Cameron in the book, in Whittaker's book.
Yeah. I wonder what that's all about.
Yeah, bit of foreshadowing. Makes you think. Makes you reimagine David Cameron in the book. Especially if you've got the audio book, which I still have, with William Russell doing the narrative.
Yeah.
David Cameron now has a different look in my... Does ex Prime Minister David Cameron now in my head look like David Campbell?
Does he have a time traveling pig's head?
Yeah, you really have a little bit of a dirty mind today.
Ah, Castorbis podcast coming to you live from the gutter. Do you know what we should do after Christmas? We should have a look at the War Games and maybe do a commentary. Because it'll be interesting to have a chat about it whilst we're watching it and see what's changed, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So watch the colour one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Otherwise it'd be a very long podcast.
We could do a commentary where we watch the black and white one first, then watch the colour one.
Could do that as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's...
Stick with us on that.
Okay, before we continue, just a quick update on the Red Dwarf giveaway. Sarah won the giveaway, but Sarah's email address I don't have. So, Sarah, if you could get in touch with me, it's podcasterbris@gmail.com or editor@casterbris.co.uk. Drop me a line with your preferred recipient address and I will get the book out to you as soon as possible. There's no way of knowing whether or not you're an active user, unfortunately, because there's no email address and no ability to message you through Patreon, which is something I didn't foresee. So if you are listening, please get in touch. I'm going to keep it open for a few weeks, and then I think I'm probably going to have to redraw and give someone else the opportunity to have the book, which isn't how I'd hoped it would turn out. But that's hopefully, Sarah, you're listening, and you can send over your details. Let's move on. Now, I didn't watch Andor when it first aired, or streamed, or whatever the terminology would be for that. It was really Mr. Cavanagh who persuaded me to watch it by describing it basically as Blake 7. And in many ways...
Blake 7, Episode 1.
Yeah, there's many similarities there. It did help me get on board with it and that. And you find yourself watching this world of sort of a creeping oppression, depending on what part of the galaxy it is, the setting is on, and then you've got the scenes on Coruscant where it's very, very oppressed. And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. It was slow going, but it built up momentum. And the later episodes, and when Andor is, I don't want to give too much away, but it's a couple of years old now. So when he's imprisoned, and there's the episodes with Andy Serkis in particular in the prison and that. It gains momentum as things progress. I really enjoyed it. So I'm pleased to see there's a season two, but the interesting thing about the season two, which is coming along in April next year, an interview with Empire magazine, the showrunner Tony Gilroy has basically said that Disney let him do what he wants.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because that's not the impression you get from some of the other shows and the other showrunners.
Yeah, I think what interests me on this, there's two things. I think one is, where is the critical appreciation coming from? Where are they revealing that they are getting the critical appreciation? Because it is a good season. And as you said, it did get a lot of kudos, especially from the fan bases. But it just makes me wonder again, this whole question of loud voices, because Andor appealed to a very particular type of Star Wars fan, a sort of type of Star Wars fan who might have issues with the rest of its output at the moment.
Right.
Because it speaks to another era. It's deliberately calls back to another era. It has a sort of sophistication, darkness, which would appeal to certain types of Star Wars fans, particularly ones who are very embedded and entrenched in that universe.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of positivity that came from them from that, which perhaps didn't come from them for other shows, and they will give their reasons, and I'm not here to judge their reasons at all. I'm just noting that there is like a perhaps a difference, because I've noticed in the discourse of the ones who perhaps didn't like some of the other Star Wars outputs, often use Andor as their baseline of saying this is what it should have been like.
Yeah,
Andor is the thing that all of it should be like, and that concerns me a little bit, because as far as I recall, in terms of actual streaming numbers, Andor didn't fare well.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as watched as some of the other Star Wars output, which did better.
Right.
So in sense of like the critical appreciation, is Disney running from the critical appreciation in terms of like the overall critical appreciation, because it did do well with the critics as well? Or is it, again, a slight concern I have that certain voices are loud and they might not represent everyone, which steers the direct creative directions of these sort of IP controllers, which in sometimes can be good.
Yeah.
Because I think another season of Andor in the same tone would be great, because I think it was a very smart, clever show, beautifully done. I loved it. But also, I think that for these IPs to survive, there needs to be a diversity of content that comes out. If they're all like Andor, Andor becomes a baseline of Blair, you know.
And yeah, yeah.
You need that diversity. And I worry that these IP holders are starting to over-listen to the very loud voices of these quite hardcore fandoms, which were very much pro-Andor, and not listening to the other voices of the other ones who perhaps liked other stuff as much, but are not as loud and as vocal and as perhaps even as collected. And we need that diversity. If you want Star Wars to continue to exist, it needs to tap into lots of different types of demographics.
Yeah.
And some of those demographics might not appeal to you. Don't watch those ones and just watch the ones that you'd like. But yeah, that worries me a bit. And we're seeing that a lot. And there's even been recently, so I think it was even Disney sort of saying that, you know, that they're going to take more attention of these loud voices. And you think, is that a good move? Are hardcore fans always right? I mean, especially like in Doctor Who, should, you know, the people who do all the podcasts like us, should we be the people that Russell T. Davis listens to the most? Probably not.
I should suspect it's probably the people that are watching.
Exactly. And we're not necessarily the representative of all the people who are watching. As with the output for the Disney stuff, as I say, Andor was not at the top of the ratings. So it's not what all the Star Wars fans were watching. So I think Disney has to be aware of that in terms of, so if they're giving Andor sort of space and scope to do good stuff because it's done good stuff, I hope that they carry that same sort of logic to other content which perhaps doesn't always appeal to the loud fan demographic but does score okay and gives them the same sort of flexibility. I mean, obviously I'd like to see Disney give all their shows flexibility, because for them to have actually put money behind them, I'd like to think that they believe those people can do the job, but you know.
Yeah. Well, is there an argument that maybe they've over relied on space wizards?
But again, it depends on whether that's reflected in what people are watching. If people are actually tuning into Star Wars and Disney streaming because they're looking for space wizards, then no. For the hardcore fan who watches everything over and over again and has watched all the stuff over and over again and played all the stuff over and over again, yeah, they might be tired of space wizards, which is why Andor is great. And I think Andor's great for lots of reasons. I mean, again, I'm not trying to be diversive here and sort of say they shouldn't be doing this. I think Andor was a fantastic success because it did stuff which Star Wars needs to do. It needs to, like you say, sometimes get away from space wizards and actually explore this universe and go, what is this universe that the space wizards are fighting for? Because, you know, the original films, the prequels, and to some degree the new films are kind of always on the front lines. You know, they're on the battle lines. We're not really seeing the worlds that they're fighting for. Last Jedi is probably the one out of the new trilogy, which everyone hates the bit where they go to the gambling planet. But that does give you some insight into kind of what the universes are doing while everyone's space visiting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what Andor does as well, but does it better. So I think we do need less space wizards. I totally agree. But then, like, I know The Acolyte was like lots of space wizards, but it was a different setting. And I don't think, while I had some issues with it as well, I'm not pretending I thought it was perfect. You know, it was scoring, it did cost a lot of money, like Andor. It wasn't scoring that differently to Andor as well.
Yeah.
but was for a different audience. Who loved it and loved the Space Wizards. So yeah, I just think we've got to be careful. But yeah, I think you're right. Star Wars needs to keep thinking about diversifying its approach to Star Wars. It doesn't just constantly end up being around lightsabers totally. And I think what the beautiful thing about Andor is it didn't even focus on Andor half the time. It was bigger than Andor. He was almost like an anchor point for you to explore this big world, but it wasn't really as much about him. And I thought that was great too.
Okay, now if you were a member of our Patreon, you would still be listening to myself and James talking. We would be talking about the Unification short movie starring William Shatner's face and Sam Witwer's body and part of the Roddenberry archive. And it's quite an in-depth conversation. It goes on for about half an hour. If you're a Patreon member, you'd be listening to that now. Our Patreon is free. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/Castorbras, submit your email and your name, and then you become a member instantaneously. That gives you early access to our podcasts, ad-free access to our podcasts, and extended content, as with this edition, which is essentially twice as long as the version you're listening to now on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Amazon or wherever. There is a paid option which you can choose, which gives you a couple of extra features, physical products. But with the free account, you get the podcast as we intend it to be. So please head over to patreon.com/Castorbras, sign up for free, and you'll get the rest of this podcast, and you'll get our podcasts early and ad-free and complete. We'll be back for a new edition soon. Oh, and look out for our special on the Boxes Lights coming in a few days' time. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.